What kind of challenges have you been reporting on or seeing in your coverage of, you know, retailers trying to manage through this COVID situation?
A couple of things I thought of were supply issues that they're having to deal with. The other thing I could think of is a lot of retailers really want to keep all of their staff, but it's harder and harder to retain everybody that they had pre-pandemic.
Now, to your point about the supply, I think the supply chain is all sorts of out of whack right now.
Yeah, some of those ramifications weren't felt for a while, but they certainly were felt over the course of the last couple of months. And now there's this desperation to make sure it doesn't affect Q4, which is their bread and butter.
It's always fun when you get to connect with old colleagues and friends from, you know, whether it's an industry, previous work life, things like that, and just see how it is. It's always kind of, it has one of those sort of family reunion type feels to it, and in the good sense, for sure. So, and that's recently what we had the opportunity, I had the opportunity to do, I guess you could say, as we close out our trade media podcast series here on the Independent Thinking Podcast. And well, for those who didn't know, you'll find out now that previous life for this podcast host was an editor at DealerScope magazine, a consumer electronics trade publication that dabbles very closely in the space that, you know, we operate in here at Nationwide with independent retailers. And obviously one of the sectors and segments that we cover is consumer electronics, and DealerScope would be one of the top trade publications in that space. So recently had a chance to sit down with a couple of editors there, old friend Nancy Klosek, the editor-in-chief of DealerScope and Connected Design, and then also Michael McEnany, the editorial director for DealerScope and Connected Design. So two very bright individuals, have a lot of combined history covering the consumer electronics space and CE retail space, and, you know, spent some time chatting about all kinds of things. You know, it's, I always like to say that, you know, my heart belongs to the CE industry. I've had a lot of fun and continue to have a lot of fun, you know, following what's going on in consumer electronics, and just the level of pace of change in the CE industry is, you know, it's fast. It happens fast. So it's always fun to kind of chat about it and see where things are going, where, you know, they're keeping an eye on what trends they're keeping an eye on and things like that. So that's what we did. Talked about CE trends, what they're seeing. You know, obviously COVID was a topic that came up and what they're seeing in their coverage there. And then two, you know, the industries, the trade show side of things of the industry. So I know that's a big part of what the coverage is over there at DealerScope, and going to shows and attending shows and seeing, you know, press conferences and hearing from brands and manufacturers up close, and, you know, how that's been impacted by everything we've all been going through. So all around, just a great conversation with two fine individuals that, you know, I appreciate them taking the time. So let's dive into this conversation, this Independent Thinking Podcast here with DealerScope Connected Design, Nancy Klosek and Michael McEnany. All right, we are back on the Independent Thinking Podcast, and this might be one of my favorite that I've ever done. Yeah, I know you two talking to you. Yeah, I see the looks, Nancy. Yeah, I see the eye roll. I mean it though. So this is going to be a fun one. And first of all, I appreciate you guys coming on. And for those who don't know, this is Michael McEnany of DealerScope at the. I should know because it was my title, the editorial director of DealerScope.
Yeah, and I'm Nancy, still trying to fill your shoes, but not easy.
Stop. And Nancy Klosek, editor-in-chief of DealerScope and Connected Design. Guys, first, I appreciate you taking the time out of your day. I know it's hectic and busy, but appreciate you finding time for Nationwide and coming on our Independent Thinking Podcast.
I'm always happy to hang out with Nationwide. You guys do such great work within this space. It's fun to get a chance to chat with you guys and talk to that audience.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate it. And of course, always appreciate the coverage and seeing you guys. I know we haven't in a while, and we may not for a while, but seeing you at prime times is always nice. And, you know, we appreciate the coverage. So, well, let's start with, you know, just your day to day. You know, I know obviously we're, like I mentioned, very familiar with you guys. I may, for those who don't know, have a bit of history prior to Nationwide, was with DealerScope and Connected Design. over there at CT Lab. But for those who don't know, Nancy, I know you were there before my time. So tell us a little bit about DealerScope, about connected design, and what CT Lab's all about.
Okay, well, I've been with editor there and editor in one capacity or another since 2005, which is ancient times. DealerScope, I started then, and then I started up with Connected Design, which and it started 4 years ago. Before that, I worked for a Japanese-owned trade publication in New York. 20 years. So DealerScope, you want to tell you a little bit about what we cover? Well, we're aimed at CE retailers, basically, and we cover them and all related businesses like buying groups, distributors, and other industry organizations. And Connected Design is very much the same and aimed at technology integrators and related business and covers those buying groups, yada, yada. Well, you know, it's basically the same, but a different, slightly different audience. There is some overlap, as you know.
For sure. Always fun trying to toe that line. But Mike, how about a little bit about you and kind of where you come from?
Sure. It's interesting. I started at NAPCO on, not necessarily on DealerScope, but part of what was the CTPG group when Nancy probably was first starting her career out at DealerScope. You might have been a freelancer at that point. I don't recall going back. I don't remember what I had for lunch. So to go back 20 years is a little rough. But I started, I launched a publication with NAPCO called Picture Business, which was in the photo retail space when there was a photo retail space until Mr. Steve Jobs came along and kind of changed that paradigm. But I worked on DealerScope for a while. We launched another couple of pubs along the way. We launched CE Week. And then I kind of left to start my career in marketing. I launched a company on my own. And now, unfortunately for Nancy, I've come back. I wasn't quite done yet here. And I came back in October of last year, as you'll know, Rob, to fill your shoes. And I've been going pretty well since. It's been great being back with Nancy, somebody I worked with years ago. And we had a real fun run. And it's fun to be back.
That's awesome. And something, too, another layer to CT Lab that some may know, some may not. The IFA, Mesa Berlin relationship. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that started, I guess, about 3 years ago with their investment in us, and now we're fully owned by them. So that's pretty much the synopsis of it. So
and they show is,
don't know who they are. They run a huge European trade show. Used to be every 2 years, then they switched it to every year. They get a tremendous number of both trade and consumer visitors, hundreds of thousands of people. And it's sort of a hybrid event in that the consumers come in at the end. And it's sort of a good time for everybody. You know, they bring their children, they bring strollers. It's quite an interesting show.
Those fairgrounds in Germany, you know, I've done a few shows out there, and that is the way they typically do them all, is that there is a consumer component at the end, and they're held on these really immense fairgrounds with 19 or 20 different buildings housing various aspects. And obviously, you know, EIFA has been cruising along for many, many years and, you know, making an effort to continue amid this pandemic. They are going to put together and in the middle of putting together with our help a hybrid virtual physical event that'll be September 3rd through the 5th. So we're anxious to both cover that and see how that shakes out.
It's awesome. Well, thinking of you guys as you go through it, I know what those days are like over there and trying to, you know, work through that. So nothing but the best, and we'll be thinking of you as it goes on. But Mike, you mentioned the pandemic and kind of what we've been living through these past couple of months. I know, you know, interestingly for us, the three of us sitting here, we're all pretty much remote workers at this point. So, I mean, the day-to-day, it may not necessarily be very different from kind of what we're used to from a working perspective, but to each of you, I mean, how have you noticed a lot of differences in sort of how you've had to go about, you know, doing your jobs on a day-to-day?
I don't know. I would say the way of working is a little bit different, and then the constant meetings like these.
You right.
know. But, you know, I can feel real empathy for all the retailers and the vendors that we talk to. You know, we're all going through the same thing, but they all have unique challenges based on their markets. And some seem to be managing the situation pretty well, but, you know, it's tough. It's tough.
The lack of face-to-face, I'll be honest, over the course of the last 6 months is depressing. Not to cast a pale
yeah,
of the whole thing.
You're but not wrong.
It's depressing. I not being able to cruise into Manhattan and visit with retailers and manufacturers and to go to press conferences. I mean, the number of shows we've all missed in
right.
the last 6 months, numbers that, you know, several yeah. a month. And yeah, I would be lying if I didn't say that's such a necessary part of what we do. is the collaboration, the communication face to face. So yeah, Nancy said it. It's been rough. And I mean, I work at home anyway, so my day to day is not different. But the overall scope of what we do, absolutely different. To not have face to face is awful.
You hit the nail on the head. I mean, yeah, we're remote workers, but like not to be overlooked is the fact that I'd venture to guess, you know, 20-30% of the time where you'd be on the road at a show, you know, like you mentioned, even if it's just like a quick hop into downtown Manhattan or, you know, to go to a press conference or check out a, you know, a store opening, something like that. So there is that human interaction that's just not there right now.
It is, I mean, you build toward that. The course of a given month is building toward a nationwide event, building toward a big event like Sharp in Manhattan, building toward our event, CE Week, which unfortunately we had to cancel. Right. When that's removed, it takes a real, I think that engagement element is removed. And again, we're reduced to Zoom meetings or Microsoft Team meetings, and they're wonderful. Look, we've all discovered how great and how much can get done remotely through that. But I'll take face-to-face any day. And I miss it a great deal.
And then there's the uncertainty about if it's going to change again next week. Like, you guys are trying to plan a show. And
yeah,
Insider talk yesterday about that. It's a moving target, right? I mean,
not even like you guys think of just what it's been like in New York as things change. There's, you know, there's the local level, there's the state level you have to worry about. And, you know, I mean, there's just so many different factors and things that you have to kind of keep track of, no matter the size or and scope of whether you're a retailer, trade media, a buying group. I mean, it's just so many different things. It's almost impossible to keep track of all these rules and regulations and things that, you know, but here we are trying.
And some succeeding. I mean, you know, you're in touch certainly with a large number of independent retailers, and we're in touch with our readership. And it's been interesting watching the different ways certain are handling it, certain retailers are handling it, some being ultra conservative and that's working for them, and others kind of taking a little bit more of a chance. But, you know, we've heard literally every imaginable story. And again, some pretty good success stories, which we're very encouraged by.
Well, yeah. And you know, that's a perfect segue. I wanted to talk about your coverage and kind of what you've seen, you know, in the CE space, whether, you know, that is retailers, manufacturers, the brands that you guys cover is what, I guess we'll start with the challenges that you've noticed. What kind of challenges have you been reporting on or seeing in your coverage of, you know, retailers trying to manage through this COVID situation?
Yeah, on the reopening with some, and then Nancy, I know you've got some good stories as well, because she's done a few insider talks where she's had people on discussing that specifically. Right. You know, I've been on the phone with a few people too, obviously, over the course of the last few months. And, you know, the reopening was, again, a gigantic challenge. How much is too much? How much is too little? What I've discovered a lot of them is telling me is they've developed this approach where normally you'd like people to come into the store and linger a little bit. And now this feeling is that people don't want to linger. They want to come in. They have a very specific idea of what they want to purchase, and then they want to get out. And that's been kind of a restructure and a rethinking of how the sales team is going to interact with people, obviously at a distance and with all the proper PPE in place. But they're realizing that they can only let a certain amount of people in the store at a time. So it behooves them now to do something they're not used to doing, which is bum rush people out the door so they can get a new group of people in. That's been a challenge, I think, for a lot of them. And, you know, we're seeing different retailers handle that differently, and some really, really deftly, and they're having a real good run with it. So
a couple of things I thought of were supply issues that they're having to deal with. One person we spoke with on these retailer insider talks, he's involved in selling fitness devices that have screens on them, and there's a big problem with getting the supply of the screens from China. There are real big issues with that. The other thing I could think of in general is a lot of retailers really want to keep all of their staff, but it's harder and harder to retain everybody that they had pre-pandemic. So those are the two things I could think of. It's unfortunate. Yeah. Trying as hard as you can, but difficult.
Right. And I, you know, to your point about the supply, I think even you kind of look at what we hear from on the nationwide side, the challenges that members are facing. And I've seen it in coverage elsewhere too. The supply chain is all sorts of out of whack right now. I know in particular the appliance side, that's been the case because retailers had to shut down. But if you think about where kind of this all started overseas, where a lot of manufacturers are based and you know, particularly appliance manufacturers that had to shut down their operations or reduce the scale of their operations and, you know, weren't producing at full capacity, that, you know, if you didn't have the, not that anyone could have predicted this, but the foresight to kind of stock your warehouses early on, you know, you found yourself in a situation rather quickly where your appliances kind of dried up, your appliance inventory dried up, and then so did the manufacturer's inventory. So there you are, left with not many places to turn in order to order, you know, to restock your warehouses.
On the other hand, they're doing really booming business with things that they're able to get because
right.
of the stay-at-home situation.
Yep.
So it kind of cuts both ways, right?
I know. So like the demand's really high. So in theory, you would hope that, you know, manufacturing remained high to keep up with that demand, but in fact, it had to shut down, so it's
right.
compounded by that fact.
Yeah, some of those ramifications weren't felt for a while, but they certainly were felt over the course of the last couple of months. And now there's this desperation to make sure it doesn't affect Q4, which is their bread and butter. I mean, you know, we're talking 40% or 50% of their, you know, revenue during the course of the year is going to be garnered over the course of the last 3 months of the year. So, yeah, it's certainly dicey, and it remains so because, as Nancy said earlier, we don't know. There's so much unknown. We don't know what's going to happen in the next 3 to 6 months. So it's they're still poking around in the dark to an extent.
Is
right.
there a Black Friday? Is there even going to be a Black Friday?
Well, you know what's crazy? You mentioned that, and we recently looked at. I don't know. I'm sure you guys are aware of Adobe Analytics and everything they produce, especially around Black Friday. They're kind of one of the go-to industry insights for as far as, you know, what online perform, like how the e-commerce space is doing around Black Friday. And they had a report, I think it was back in June or July, that looked at those first 3 months of the lockdown, when, you know, March, April, May into June. And I mean, it's unbelievable to me, but spending during the first couple of months of the lockdown surpassed Black Friday spending from 2019. So people were actually spending, like, what Black Friday every year is always a record setter for
Pretty
online
strong.
Spending or just spending in general. But in particular, you know, it's always going up every year. You know, new records being set on Black Friday. And I there was no holiday. People were just at home shopping online because they were forced to. And all of a sudden, you know, I think it was close to $80 billion was spent, you know, on average over the course of 3 months. So I just unbelievable to see that push to online. So what is Black Friday?
Yeah, you're right. Those numbers were skewed a lot by the need to now buy literally everything, stuff
yeah.
that you would typically run out and buy online. At a store, I mean, now is being purchased online. So those numbers exploded in large part because of that. But yeah, it's still, they were insane numbers. And it'll be interesting to see, I mean, you know, what kind of an environment we're living in come November, you know, versus if people have just now really gotten used to, you know, people that had never purchased online or did it very sparingly, now
right.
are pretty used to it. And a lot of them dug it. So let's see what happens in November. Those numbers could be really really, really
yeah.
pretty.
A lot of people were introduced to the idea who may not have been, you know, real comfortable with it, but out of the necessity of having to do so. And then maybe they, you know, all of a sudden realize, hey, this is kind of convenient. So, I mean, this shift, I know it's been said about a lot of industries right now, kind of, you know, the fast forward, but COVID really forcing industries to kind of press that fast forward button on the way they operate. And I mean, retail's no different. E-commerce, it might have been fast forwarded by, you know, who knows how long, maybe a decade ahead of where we thought we'd be right now because of COVID.
Yeah, that, as you said, has touched many an industry. I mean, the one that we're seeing and that we covered in a recent issue was the autonomous robotic industry. I mean, that has really been fast tracked. I mean, you know, these disinfectant robots and delivery, autonomous delivery, that really was jump started. You know, again, it was rolling a little fine, but I think over the course of April, May, June, July, you know, it certainly was, you know, skyrocketed and was clearly fast forwarded. Go ahead, Nancy. I'm sorry, I didn't want to step on you.
In the course of some of the conversations we've had on those insider talks, there is a worry that some of these booms are going to tail off soon as the COVID rages on. I mean, how long can it go on that people are buying because they're nesting? You know, they're buying. And then if it keeps going on, there is that underlying worry by some of the
Something tells me, you know, I'm sure you guys are familiar or have heard of that hoarding show. I think it was like one of those like TLC shows on hoarders and whatnot. you know, post-COVID, we could probably have an entire channel dedicated to some hoarders. I know Amazon, you know, I've noticed out front of our house, the FedEx truck, like, slow rolls by now because I think he expects to stop. And when he doesn't, it's, like, to the point where he maybe wants to come check and make sure we're okay because he didn't have a delivery that day.
you're right. I mean, that's absolutely a new way of life. And, again, you chatted earlier about, you know, changing consumer shopping habits. And there's a ton of them that will probably stick that, you know, weren't really a big part of the pattern, you know, until COVID. And now, you know, retail is going to have to prepare now for, a shift, a new paradigm.
Flipping the script a little, we've kind of talked about the challenges and, you know, not that they're negative or anything like that, some interesting challenges and trends that have kind of emerged. Any inspiring stories that you kind of, you know, were able to cover because of this, whether it's a retailer or brand doing something that made you just kind of take a step back and be like, wow, that's a really cool way to sort of tackle this challenge that we've all been facing?
You know, the usual independent retailer mindset of trying to be nimble when something happens, it seems to carry through to everybody we speak with, but specifically, I can't think of anything.
I think the thing that, you know, we've garnered from the last 3-4 months of conversations with retailers is, you know, this is an opportunity for the local guy. They, you know, people are shopping locally now a lot more than they had been prior to COVID. You don't want to take the trip that's got an extra few miles attached to it. And the local guys that have been smart with making people feel safe, operating more efficiently, knowing that they just kind of want to get in and get out, as I mentioned earlier, those guys are winning. I mean, they're getting customers back, and there's this idea that they may now become more loyal customers because of the fact they feel safe, they've been treated better, and they've kind of gotten reintroduced to shopping locally because of the conditions and the situation we're in. So that's, to me, been the most inspiring thing, the idea that maybe this is going to ultimately, down the road, wind up helping a lot of the independent local guys. And, you know, let's see. I mean, it's a silver lining that we're hoping to see. I'm not saying that that's for sure, but clearly a few that we've talked to said they're seeing an uptick in foot traffic lately, and customers seem super appreciative of the fact that these guys have gone the extra steps and you know, are concerned about their employee safety and their customer safety.
Yeah, always. I mean, we've seen some, you know, stories of our members kind of doing some things, but to your point about just independence in general, there's always been that sort of like the nice connection that they are local and you can go there and the family, but this situation, to your exact point about them being nimble and flexible, you know, really on display, I think, during COVID, just the way they're able to adapt, whereas, you know, big corporate chains don't necessarily have that same, you know, just ability to move and pivot as quickly as independents have. And even beyond that, just the expertise, you know, you think about the shopping experience. I think you think about the first timers that are going to an independent store for, you know, during this time because they can, or, you know, maybe they trust going into a local shop more than maybe high traffic big box stores, and they get that independent local experience. They're introduced to, you know, product savvy type of sales floor person that can actually give them the right information and in-depth information. And, you know, this has been an opportunity for independents to set themselves apart.
There's a we're in this together attitude.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
There's a chance your kids are going to the same schools and every school's handling this differently. And one of the guys told us that half the conversations are about, hey, you live here too, this is awful, and how are you managing? And that definitely is something they carry out the door and kind of feel like, hey, you know what, I'm gonna stick with that place because, you know, that was a pleasant experience. And again, they're suffering too, just like we are. You don't feel that with the big chains as much.
Your nationwide guys have like 1,000 inspiring stories to tell, right?
I think so. I'm trying to, you know, that's what I try to do with this podcast over here, is try to find those stories. And there's been a few. One that always stands out. You know, do you guys, Mattress Mac Gallery Furniture down there in Houston? Okay. He's always, you know, the guy that's when the Astros, I touchy subject to some, but when you bring up the Astros having been in the World Series, he, you know, always placed the big bets on, you know, if the Astros win the World Series, he would give away some like 1 million mattresses, something like that, or deep discounts on mattresses. Worked out for him 1 year, not so much the second year, he opened up his warehouses and stuff and things like that when people, you know, were put out, and, you know, offered them, I know, some really solid deals on mattresses, even to the point where I know back when Houston was hit, I forget too many hurricanes now to remember, but you know, but he's the type of guy where he would open up his showrooms and give people shelter and that sort of thing. So, I mean, we've seen that. We've seen retailers that, you know, mattress retailers that otherwise were shut down start, you know, turning their products. They have like the slip covers for mattresses and things like that, you know, turning that around and making PPE and things like that out of their warehouses. And yeah, there's a whole bunch.
There's long-term gains in all of that. I mean, you may sacrifice some short-term gains doing that and operating that way, but boy, I think the long-term gains outweigh.
And the specific retailer slipped in my mind, but I know there was another member that, you know, had a couple, an EMT outpost in their town. Their washer and dryer had, you know, either gone on the fritz or they needed new, or they were looking to, they just donated like three sets of washers and dryers to, you know, a local station. So just, you know, it's always those little things like that kind of stand out. And just show, imagine, I not to say that Walmart or Target or someone like that wouldn't do that, but just the how much it means to a local community to have a local business do something like that. It just...
Feel-good stories, absolutely.
Yeah, they're cool. But, you know, looking at some trends, we've talked a lot about retail. How about on the CE side? You mentioned some autonomous stuff. Any other... What are some of the big trends that you guys are following in tech? I miss talking tech all the time. So, we talk furniture, bedding, appliances. I love them. Don't get me wrong. But consumer electronics is where the heart is.
I jotted down some because I didn't want to forget any of them that I thought. One of the smart home devices, of course, are on the rise in consumer purchase. And we just ran an NPD piece saying that like one in three homes now has a smart home device. So, and also smart home security devices for obvious reasons, because people are nesting at home so much and they want to have that sense of security. Let's see what else. Of course, ultra large screen TVs, right? It's the hottest trends now, as you know, right? People are captive at home and they spend more screen hours in front of their TVs. And then they tend to notice how old their TVs are, how subpar the image is. So, they're looking to buy more of those. And some of that bleeds over, I think, into appliance buying as well. Your members can probably say for sure about this, but I think it's beyond an emergency replacement situation now. I think there must be more going out the door because people are home more, they're doing more wash, they're paying more attention, you know, they're using the refrigerator doors more.
No. Certainly. Well, I mean, just speaking anecdotal, thinking about it, I mean, I personally, like we don't own a freezer. We have a garage that, you know, has some space. We had a second fridge, but it, you know, got rid of it, whatever. It was old. It came with the house. But yeah, we're looking now into adding like a chest freezer. I know that freezers have been the appliance that has been just, you know, you can't find it anywhere. It's on months long back order because people were buying food and grocery stores shelves were empty. You needed somewhere to store that food. That's a perfect example of that.
Yep. We've also seen an uptick, Nancy and I, you know, from our coverage in the health and wellness aspects to a lot of the smart products. I don't know that manufacturers would have been as upfront about what this particular product that cooks food does and how it makes the food healthier. The robo vacuums, EcoVac is a good example. It, you know, they probably wouldn't have pushed that the vacuum cleaner eliminates 99.3% of bacteria on your floor. Well, they are now because people really care about that. And yeah, air purifiers is another one that, you know, they're moving pretty well because, again, the manufacturers are telling the retailers that this is a big deal now more than ever. So there's a few products like that in the health and wellness category that, you know, have really come to the fore. Manufacturers are focusing on those features.
I'm even thinking, health and wellness on the wearable side. One cool story, you know, kind of made me pine for my DealerScope days was Aura, the smart ring, when they struck up the partnership with the NBA before all the players went into the bubble down there in Orlando, and they mentioned that, you know, players were going to be wearing it because there was something that like the Aura ring tracks that actually could tell some early onsets of COVID.
Apparently, yeah, absolutely. I saw that as well. We had that product in the last issue of the book, and a fascinating product. And yeah, you're right. Some of those health and wellness things have taken on another layer when you consider what we're currently living in. So yeah, that product category is a big spotlight on it and they're taking advantage. Yeah, so which I get.
I also, through our distributor relationships, heard of good business in a lot of things related to home education, like laptops and also even things like whiteboards that I would never have associated with education and conferencing equipment as well. You wouldn't normally associate a whiteboard with a homeowner somehow, but then again, it's not just the students who are having to work at home now.
Yeah, teachers. Yep, teachers that are going virtual, things like that, speak to that exactly in our house.
Distance learning is a thing. I mean, it always was, but we didn't really use it. Now we're being forced and force-fed distance learning. And Nancy, you're right. Yeah, a lot of product categories.
People at home. You've got kids at home, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I got a college student that is going back in a few days. They weren't sure for a while, but she's headed back to Binghamton. And my son is in high school. And, you know, the school year ended with his introduction to distance learning. And it looks like it's going to begin in a hybrid fashion in a few weeks. So, yeah, that's, you know, something that clearly wasn't, we were thinking in our future. And now it is our future. It'll probably be hybrid for a while.
Another category, too, that hasn't come up yet, but I know certainly, again, speaking from personal example, is networking, home networking.
Yes.
Routers and Wi-Fi hotspots and, you know, all this strain on the home network. People need more speed.
Yep, 100%. Absolutely the case. And we've had dealers tell us such, yeah.
A couple of others that we kind of found out about is in-car tech. Those are hot commodities, the technology for inside the car, because consumers are looking to bump up that comfort level in that environment as well. Of course, custom installation, indoor, outdoor products. A lot of outdoor products are being designed.
Yeah, people want to spend that time outside. No, there's a lot of awesome trends. So I'm sure lots that you guys will be keeping an eye on. But, you know, as you look ahead, is there anything else trends-wise or otherwise that you're kind of hoping to see or that really excites you about what's to come?
Yeah, on the
maybe even maybe I was going to say maybe even from a trade show perspective. I know we've obviously talked about, you know, what's going on with IFA, but even, you know, what are you guys hearing elsewhere from you know, the myriad other companies that you end up, you know, traveling and going to see and stuff like that?
I think the future of trade shows, to be honest, you know, CES will be a great litmus test, right? Let's see how a show of that magnitude pulls off a virtual event. But I think even once we're out of this, I think the hybrid, you know, what ETH is going to do is a part physical, part hybrid. That may be the future of trade shows going forward. It'll probably be a money saver. If the virtual part can be done correctly and engagingly, I can't imagine why that wouldn't become more a part of what we'll be used to covering as time goes forward. You know, what do you think, Nancy? I kind of feel like that could be our future.
I think you're right. It's just hard to predict what's going to happen next year. Who can think that far ahead?
I know, right?
We're worried about getting to the end of each week. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to the first conversation I have with somebody in the industry that begins with, "Oh, remember COVID?" So I can't wait till we get there. That'll be kind of great. Conversation starter for me.
Someday soon.
I hope. And then the other thing I wanted to mention, you know, we got a bunch of Deloitte studies. You know, on the channel was always there, right? It's always been a big part of what these guys need to be about and what they need to do. But over in Europe, it's become a really big deal. And we're being told the retailers that are really mastering that combination of in-store and online engagement are really big winners, because you don't never want people coming back in your store. We're always going to want to have the website and your online efforts drive traffic to the store, but you also want people buying online because that's a big part of business today. There's a balance going on over in Europe and in China as well, where they seem to be perfecting the whole idea of drawing the customer in and engaging them, but giving them kind of an in-store type experience online that is actually making them want to go to the store, and they're kind of getting the best of both worlds. And I think we'll see that over here once we get a little further along in conquering this thing.
No, that's those hybrid. I mean, we've seen it too. I think you think of, we've seen stories of video, whether it's setting up video appointments online and kind of chatting with a sales rep, or even sales reps walking around the showroom with you kind of on an iPad, this sort of experience, and taking you around the store. There's all kinds of that sort of stuff that it exists now. I know it, you know, we'll see it adapt, I'm sure, over time, but, you know, just crazy how, you know, retail was evolving, but to see it kind of get pushed into this mode where evolution was necessary to stick up, to keep up with, you know, everything that was happening because of this pandemic has just been it's been crazy, but it's honestly, it's been pretty cool to see those that have done it well and succeed because of it.
Yeah, they're leading us. Those folks are leading us into the future, again, by force, because they had to. But I agree with you. It's kind of not been a horrible thing to see. Just the circumstances are unfortunate.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I've taken up a lot of your guys' time. I know those newsletters have to go out. I know that the article's got to get written, so I don't want to...
Nobody knows better than you.
I do not want to take up any more of your time. But Mike and Nancy, I really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun. So, thank you guys for sparing some time and chatting with us for the podcast.
Always happy to, Rob.
Yeah, take care.
You too.
Thank you.
Perfect. And a huge thanks again to Nancy and Mike for taking time out of their schedules. I know, we're talking now. It's after the show. This episode will have published after IFA came to a conclusion. So I know their schedules are maybe a little bit freer now, but they were certainly busy of late keeping up with everything going on over there in Berlin and what's happening. So I appreciate them taking a few moments to jump on a podcast with us and chat about consumer electronics and everything they're following. So as always, appreciate you taking the time to listen to the Independent Thinking Podcast, and we will catch you next time.